Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Michigan Avenue Media. A good story is a good story. Hosted by Marsha Casper Cook. Live shows every week with interesting interviews in the entertainment field with writers, producers, directors, and screenwriters. There's also shows about newsworthy topics and group discussions about writing tips to help writers reach success. New to the show are conversations about personal struggles and how to feel good about yourself in today's world. One thing's for sure, it's always a lively conversation and lots of fun. So sit back and enjoy the show.
Hi, it's Marsha, and we are going to have a live show with Archie Belsky or Dana Perry, whatever day we catch him on. And there's like three of us here today. And so, yeah, she's very lively, and he's great with dialogue. We're going to talk about that, but I'm just going to mention, so because I don't want to forget, next week I have Delta James and C.D. Gorey, and each of them have like over 100 books. God knows how, but they do, and they're really fun. So we're going to have a fun show next week as we are today. So, all right, should I call you Dana today?
Well, first off, I mean, before we even start, you're promoting another show for next week. I mean, we haven't even got started yet. Come on.
I know. You know what? I don't usually do that, but I forget. And after the show,
I know.
We get in a conversation, I go like, oh, my God, I forgot to say about next week. And I'll tell you one of the reasons I did this, because now on Facebook, I had heard this. Some comedian was talking about this. They said that all of a sudden Facebook, like, you're seeing things from like 2018, 20, and that's what I'm seeing. So I had seen people on there saying that when they post something, they don't know if it's out there or not. And now I'm seeing things from all these years before. So that's a bad thing. So all of us that are posting on and off like daily, we don't even know now if it's going on or not. So that's the thing.
Well, I wouldn't put too much stock in that, Marsha. I mean, there are always these things on Facebook that you see that aren't true, you know, like, oh, if you do this,
but I see it happening though. I'm scrolling and I see stuff and I'm going like, what? And then I look at the date. Yeah, I mean,
well,
so it's just, you know, so now I think you got it. You're a big promoter for yourself.
Well,
tell everybody a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm just saying, I use Facebook a lot, and
you are
good. Thank you. And you know, I haven't seen that. I mean, generally when you get an older text, and this has happened to me, or an older post, this has happened a few times, it's because somebody has posted it. I'm like, somebody has found an old post of yours, and they put a comment on it, and that'll recycle it, and that's happened. But I know, like, when I post stuff, and I post pretty much every day, I know people are getting it because I'm getting comments on it, you know, so I tend to not believe a lot of the stuff I hear about Facebook being screwed up because I haven't had that.
But I try to stay out of any conversations, you know, that are not good. So I don't see what a lot of other people see because, and you don't either, because I don't post personal things and neither do you, but people do. And once you start doing that, you get all kind of messages. You know, I don't comment as much because some of the things I see that they're not even right. You know, so I'm not even getting involved in the conversation. But tell everybody a little bit about yourself.
Just trying to sort out my own name thing, as you pointed out. So the name thing very quickly is that I've published 24 novels and 17 of them under my name of, well, are pretty close to my name of R.G. Belsky, which is what most you have mostly had me on here as R.G. Belsky, and which is basically my name. But I've also written seven novels, thriller novels, under the name of Dana Perry, three of which just came out this month simultaneously. Yes. So when I'm promoting,
the covers are beautiful.
Well, I can say that because I have nothing to do with the covers. I mean, you know,
but they are beautiful, though.
Publisher.
No, they're really nice covers.
No,
they're
great.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
They're very nice.
Well, it's, you know, it's Booketeer is the publisher. It's a big publisher,
yeah,
and
they're really
actually
nice
based in London. And, you know, it's great when you actually have a publisher doing that, you know, because I know a lot of people like have to come up with their own covers and stuff, and
right.
I don't have to worry about any of that. But, yeah, so those books are written under Dana Perry. So this month, which gets even more confusing, or this year, at the beginning of the year in January, I had a book came out, Claire Carlson, it's R.G. Belsky. And now I've got three that come out as Dana Perry. So I'm still promoting the Claire Carlson, R.G. Belsky, but I'm really promoting more now this month, the Dana Perry, Nikki Cassidy one. So that, yeah, it gets a little confusing. And just to throw something in, I, as you know, Marcia, and people that follow me, that I've been a journalist most of my life and career, spent years and years and years in New York City journalism. And I'm not known as either one in there. I'm known as Dick Belsky. That was my name. So if you want to find anything out about me as a journalist, you've got to go to Dick Belsky. So it's a long, boring story how I got all these names. But the bottom line is, like a lot of things, it isn't my choice, but it just sort of worked out that way. So,
well,
so today I'm pretty much more Dana Perry. Yeah.
So, I mean, so, all right, so this is the thing. A lot of people out there that I know, and we talk a lot about this, is should they go under another name, or it's so hard to market. I've tried it, and I had a difficult time, and I'm going to do it again. But I didn't, because I was talking on my show, and then I was talking about other things, then I had another name, and it got very confusing, and I thought, okay, I'll just do my name. So, I mean, this is a problem when you do another name because, you know, you're very well known as R.G. Belsky, and, you know, now you're known as Dana Perry. Even when I think I remember this, I think it was Francho or somebody, and I'm thinking, who's Dana Perry? I'm like, who is that? And then it was you.
Yeah, well,
you know,
it does get complicated on a lot of levels.
You know,
well, it's a common problem for me, too, because I have to, like, so I have, like a Twitter account, a Facebook account, because I'm as Dana Perry as well as R.G. Belsky. So I have to,
I
know, it gets confusing. Two things about it. First off, like I said, it isn't my choice. What happened was, again, I've sold a series of the Claire Carlson books. Before that, I had a Gil Molloy series as R.G. Belsky, and they're much more traditional kind of mysteries with a character, like a PI kind of character, even though they're journalists, solving a mystery. When I started working for Booketeer at the same time, this London publisher, these books that I'm writing for them are much more thrillers. They're different, you know, they're different kind of book to a degree. There's a lot more action. There's a lot more bodies dropping, and they are there are characters involved, but it's much more of a different kind of book. And so they felt they wanted a different name to set it apart from the R.G. Belsky name. So this was their choice to do it. And, you know, I didn't like say I wanted to, but I agreed to do it. The big thing when you use a pen name, I think one of the important things is you just got to be fair to the readers. You know, you can't pretend you're somebody who you're really not. You know, I couldn't like pretend that there's a person named Dana Perry and that isn't me.
Well, that was exactly. Right.
Yeah, so you have to, you know, I said this very upfront. I said, look, you know, there is no Dana Perry. That's me. So, like, if you go on the Dana Perry Facebook page, you'll see a picture of me. And on it, I'll say that, you know, I'm Dana Perry, who also writes books under the name of R.G. Belsky. So
a lot of people say that now. Yeah, a lot of authors that come on do say that. They mention that. They have to.
Because there have been some issues. Well, there also have been, like, issues like you know, like it's just, you know, like it's just the idea of playing fair with the reader, not trying to, you know, pull something on them there have been some famous cases. I mean, Stephen King wrote a series of books years ago under a pen name, didn't tell anybody because, you know, he didn't want them to know he was Stephen King, but that's a different kind of a thing. And, you know, like now, like, you know, Dana Perry is, you know, one of the advantages of the name is it's kind of like a male or female name. If you look at Dana Perry, you can't be 100% sure who I am. But if you look at the picture, you're going to know who I am. And if I presented myself that I was a woman without being one, that would, I think, would be not a good idea. So, you know, again, I just, you know, I try and play fair with the reader. Everybody
knows
who I am.
But with all the independent publishing now, there may be a lot of authors that people know that are writing under another name and they never say. Because if you're a big, let's say you have a publisher, anyone, okay, St. Martin, okay, and they say, oh, you know what, I don't like this book that, you know, you just wrote, so we're not going to publish it. So then they go, Right. Okay, fine, and then they go under another name and publish it themselves. Because this is the market, this is how life is now.
Right.
And nobody has to know.
Yeah.
And you know, in some ways, you know, it is good for people because, like, sometimes when you have a contract with the publisher and you wrote something and they don't like it and it's a good story, people are missing out on a good story because they go, we don't think we want it. And people love it. So now,
yeah.
And people, that's the other thing. You don't know, like, your face is on your page. And
right.
I put mine on, I don't love pictures, but you don't know who anybody is. Nobody does. I mean, there's a lot
of
times,
but I do,
you know,
but I think
like
you
we talked about,
you
we don't even know each other. People know each other by their voice, and that's why you're on a show, and people know you also from shows. You do a lot of shows.
It would, right, but it would be, I think it would be, given my experience, and again, I wouldn't want to do this, but if you chose to not reveal your identity and to do another book and pretend you were somebody else, it becomes very, very difficult to promote it or go, because, you know, what do you do then when you go to a book
signing? That's
signing?
What happened.
Who are
that's
you,
why I had
you
know? Right, I know. That's
yeah,
why
and somebody,
I
mean, like,
that.
Like if I went to a book signing and said I'm Dana Perry and somebody else had bought my book at a earlier at a, they're like, you're not Dana Perry, you're Artie Belsky, you
know. That's why I did
so,
it, I know. That's,
I
agree. I
try and simplify it as much as I can, and it still is a bit complicated. And the other weird thing, which is not directly related to this, but not only do I have one Dana Perry book out, as you know, Marcia, but there's this idea, which is I've never been involved with before, to come out with three books at a time. So it's kind of like a trilogy, three thrillers that are kind of linked to each other. And so I have three Dana Perry books, all of which came out on the same day, April 2nd. And so when you're promoting it, you're kind of like, well, I'm promoting this the first book, which is called The Nowhere Girls, but I'm also promoting the next two. And these books, unlike a lot of my series, normally in a series, you can read a book out of series sequence and it's still okay. You know, like you can read the fourth book and they're all still standalones. The three books, I mean, they are standalones in that there's a mystery that my character, Nikki Cassidy, solves in each book, but there also is an overarching mystery that goes through all three of the books. And so it's like you really, really want to start with the book one, which is The Nowhere Girl. And then the hope, obviously, is that you so are captivated by the characters and the story that you just keep reading the same way we binge watch a series on TV.
Exactly. That's why I think it's a good thing, you know, because it does take a while for some people to write books. Okay, I mean, you can't just pump them out like this, 1, 2, 3. So when somebody likes something you've written, and because it's under another name, they may not even know you as Dick Belsky or whatever, you know. So now then they go, oh, here's another one, I'm going to read this. And then they go, oh, I'm finished, I'm going to read this. So I think because of this series on TV, people are used to this now a lot, and they like it.
Yeah. Well, the concept, which is, you know, the traditional concept had been always that you read the first book in a series, and then and if you're lucky, in another year the second book comes out, and then another year after that the third one comes out. Sort of in the same way we used to watch TV a lot, where, you know, a show would come on and we'd have to watch The Sopranos on Sunday night at 9 or whatever, or you didn't, you know. And the theory,
you have to wait till September.
Publishers,
you have to wait till September till it
and
starts
then
again.
So my publisher's theory was, or is, that that people, you know, when they finish one book, they want to read, if they like it, and that's the key, you know, they have to like it. And then, you know, it's like, oh, wow, I want to read another one. And, you know, I've had a few people who have literally said to me, they've literally read all three books in one sitting. They've kept going, you know, like, and just like kept going through it, which is good on one sense, but on the other hand, it's kind of like wait a minute, you know, that's like all of, you know, because I mean, if you think about three books, think about the amount of work that is for me as an author, you know, because like normally an author will write one book a year,
right.
which is about 350 pages in a thriller. Well, this is like, you know, between 1,000 and 1,200 pages that I had to write.
I know.
And I did this all within basically within a year because, you know, we wanted to get them out there. So you know, it's funny because then, you know, somebody will read them, those a few people, and I take it as a compliment. They'll sit down and they say, oh, I read them all in 25. I couldn't put them down. I put them all in 24 hours. When's the next one coming out? And I'm like, hey, give me a break.
pages,
you know?
Right, they just don't pop out.
Yeah, and these books are very difficult to write.
Well, and you
I was just
going to
say, these books are
you have a lot of dialogue. You write
The dialogue part is the easiest part to me. We can talk about that in a minute. But the dialogue part
too.
Is the easiest part. I that's the part of writing I love, and I think I'm probably that's my best thing that I do. The thing that makes it tough, especially about a real thriller, which these are, is you know, just getting the story right, because you've got to have a lot of action, but you've also got to have a lot of twists and red herrings and I write these books in the first person. So you're seeing that all through Nikki Cassidy's eyes,
you kind of know what she knows.
And so playing all these facts and storylines together, that's the tough part. The dialogue is fun. I love writing dialogue.
Me too.
I think you and I have talked about this on your show in the past because we both have done some script writing. That's why script writing is so great, because I mean you don't really write much description or anything. It's all, you know, bang 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 quotes. And I probably do more of that in my books than most authors do. I mean, they're very dialogue heavy, and I try and keep the description.
Well, that's why they
you know,
read
I don't
it fast. That's why they could read it fast.
Exactly.
They're not bogged down with two or three pages of stuff they don't even care about.
And the key, the real key, I mean, and we've already morphed into a dialogue discussion, which I know you wanted to do anyway. To me, the real key, the most important thing about writing dialogue, which, you know, I think not all authors really get, because I've read some bad books with bad dialogue, is that it's got to be natural. It's got to be real, but sound real. And, you know, you kind of got to talk the way you would talk. And that's what, you know, one of the biggest compliments that I've gotten, and I've gotten this from a few people, maybe even from you, who've said to me that the dialogue of my characters, like Claire or my Gil Molloy character, they sound like you. So they talk just like you. And that's why I think it comes across as natural, because I'm a real person and I talk. So I try not, you know, I try not to make the dialogue like stilted or force it. Throw in what somebody would say, like, you know, like slang and hey, what about that? And make it quick. So make it funny and make it interesting and make it sometimes outrageous. It's like I say, there are parts when you start to write fiction that are harder than others. And I know there's a lot of people that have trouble with dialogue, and there's parts that I don't write that I have some struggles with, like description of stuff and things. But for me, the dialogue part is not only the easiest part, but it's fun. I enjoy it. I love doing it.
Me too. I've done 15 scripts. I've had a couple that have been optioned, but now I'm taking one of my scripts, one of my first scripts, and I'm trying to, and I'm doing it in a book. Because it's a murder thriller. And I haven't really done that. I did it partially in one of my sexier books, but I didn't really do this, and I haven't done this story in a long time. But it's interesting because when I get to the places, like I know you do, I can tell from your writing, you're right in that scene. You're there. So when you're there, it is tiring because you are there talking, and you are there, three people, let's say three people are talking, but you're there and you are all three people because you have to be.
Right.
You can't sound the same because they're talking
well,
to people.
That's another issue in the book. That's the other issue, which you have to sometimes isn't the easiest, which is you really have to make the characters sound different. I don't want Claire Carlson's boss or Nikki's boss to talk exactly like
right.
she does, or I don't want her
no.
best friend to talk like she does. So you have to work on that. But I mean the whole idea of this screenwriting, using screenwriting as a kind of basis for like a novel, like that kind of quickness. And you know, they're different
yep.
kind of novels. There are novels like, I just was reading a novel that's like 900 pages. It's like endless description of stuff, you know. But
yeah.
that's not the kind of book I write. I write a book that's fast moving and quick. And the most interesting
yeah.
way to do this that I've ever heard of, and I never have tried this myself, but there's a pretty successful screen, and you may well know him, pretty successful screenwriter and novelist named Lee Goldberg. I don't know if you've dealt with Lee, but he's on the West Coast. And so he was like, worked on Monk and a lot of TV shows, and he now writes best-selling novels. So I interviewed him once for an article, and we were talking about a book he wrote, and he said, well, I started out as a script. I first wrote it as a script, and I said, oh,
uh-huh.
so you were going to try and sell it as a movie, and then you decided to turn it into a novel. He said, no, it was always going to be a novel. He said mm-hmm. he wrote it as a script first because
for like
he
an
wanted
outline?
The book to move fast. And he knew if he wrote
right.
into the script, he couldn't mess around. He'd have to have all the quick dialogue. And then
right.
he took that dialogue from the script and made it in the novel, which is why the novel moves. Anyway, I just thought it was brilliant. And I've never
yeah.
actually tried that, but I really get that concept because when I'm writing, I'm sort of almost thinking like I'm writing a script sometimes.
Because you're seeing it. And you do like a lot of series. You do like TV. You know, and, you know, I think, and I've said this many times, I know some people go, oh, they don't watch TV. But watching TV, I love it. And I think to me, it's like I'm kind of working at the same time I'm watching some things. Because I am not using their characters. But my brain sees a scene and I go, okay, and I go like, and then I would transform it into what my scene might be, but not anything. It has nothing to do with what they're doing. It just makes me think.
Well, that's like,
it's like
that's the
a,
same
it's
as reading
like an
books.
Assignment.
It's, well, but
yeah,
that's,
yeah, same
you
thing.
Know, for me, like when people, you know, I'm very open about the fact that, you know, I've been inspired by a lot of people. I mean, my characters
yeah.
don't just spring out of nowhere. I mean, it's like, and I've gone through like with authors, you know, like, I mean, starting with Raymond Chandler and going to Robert
right.
Parker and Sue Grafton and Michael Conley and Ross McDonald. I mean, all of these played a role, like my characters come in part from that because, you know, I'm like, oh, I want to write that kind of character because I love that character. But
right.
also, I draw on TV, you know, and I'm not just talking about, you know, the shows that are on now, like True Detective and stuff, although I do watch those and
yeah.
like those.
Yeah.
But also, like, the old shows. I swear to you that a lot of my inspiration for, like, Claire Carlson books and even maybe some of Nikki, although she's not quite as many quips and stuff as Claire, but she still
yeah.
has a number of them. A lot of it comes from, like, my endless love of the Rockford Files, watching Jim Garner, you know, being the kind
yeah,
of cool
yeah.
detective and with the quips. I mean, there are a number of times, like, I'm almost trying to channel, like, a Jim Rockford into my character, you know, like, what would he do?
But
like, always
really,
kind of trying to do the
really
right
good.
Thing.
I mean, those
yeah,
are
and,
really
and,
good.
Yeah, and I'll tell
you
another
know,
one.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say another one like that is Columbo, you know. I mean,
oh, yeah,
you watch
yeah,
those.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
I mean, you're not going to
yeah.
write a Columbo or you're not going to write a Rockford
no.
Files, but the,
no.
that kind of a character who is, like,
yeah.
so interesting to watch, that's
yeah,
what you're
yeah.
trying to grab.
Yeah, and I think that's true. And I think, you know, like Blue Bloods and shows like that, that's taken from all of the older things, you know, because I think it was Jesse Stone he did, I think it was
Tom
Jesse
Selleck.
Stone Murders or something.
Tom
Selleck.
Selleck,
right, that he did
no,
those.
Yeah,
right.
Tom
and
Selleck,
were,
no, absolutely, Tom Selleck was Jesse
and
Stone
they were good.
In a whole series of TV movies, which are really good. If you ever, they're still on, if you want to go back, I think, you know, whatever they on, Netflix or whatever. If you haven't seen them, anybody, go back. I mean,
yes,
first off,
definitely.
The Jesse Stone. So Robert B. Parker, who one of my idols,
oh, I like,
who I've
yeah.
read pretty
yeah.
much everything,
yeah. Yeah.
You know, his had two big characters. He's had a couple, but his main, everybody knows him, is Spencer. But he also wrote the Jesse Stone series, which was really, really
they
good,
were both
too.
Good. Yes, I saw
both. I think they're still being written because, both series, the estate has carried it on. But in any case, the TV movies were even, I think, probably even better than the books because they had Tom Selleck. And Tom Selleck was the absolute perfect choice to play Jesse Stone because, he's Tom Selleck. You want to see him. He's kind of magnum, but he's older.
Jesse Stone had a past. I mean, he had a major past, and kind of a depressing type of, things happened to him. I think he was alcoholic, I think.
He had three big flaws. I'm a bit of an expert in this because I've talked to friends with Reed Sparrow Coleman, who for a period wrote the Jesse Stone series after Robert Parker, and who did really great books on him, and I remember discussing the character with him at some events and stuff, and we talked about the idea of making your character flawed, and in Jesse Stone's case, it's hard to make him flawed because he's good looking, he's tough, he's honest, he's the guy everybody wants as your police chief, and he's Tom Selleck, who's the coolest guy in the world.
He's tall, handsome, everything. How do you make this guy flawed?
Well, in the Jesse Stone case, there's like three big flaws or things that went wrong. Number one, he's an alcoholic and he's battling liquor. Number two, he's divorced. He's still in love with his wife, but he's divorced.
Right.
Number three, and this is the original premise for the character is he was supposed to be like a star baseball player. He was going to be like a major league star, and he was injured, and his major league playing career was ended, and that's why he had to become a private detective because he couldn't play major league baseball. So all those things play into the backstory of Jesse Stone and make him just like there's a lot of them, like people like that, but you just make him a great character. And, I say this all the time when I talk about characters and talk about books and at various events. And I repeat myself all the time on this, but I'm so adamant about it, is that there is the most important thing in any book character. It's much more important than the story. It's much more important than the locale and the setting.
Yes, I agree.
Because I say to you, it's like, if you love the character, you will read that book, whether or not it's a particularly predictable story or not.
Right,
you can have
a really
good story, but if you don't like the character, I'm not reading that book and I'm putting it down.
Right.
And the character drives everything. And I've said, we're talking about Robert B. Parker and Spencer. I mean, the Spencer stories weren't particularly interesting. There were no particular twists to them. They would just be Spencer would go out and make quips with people and beat bad guys up and all that, but they were great because you just loved being with Spencer and hanging out with Spencer, and that's so many. I mean, Kinsey Malone.
I think that's what people do. I think that I think that people, like a lot of times now, which I feel for actors is very lucky for them because now they can do something when they're 60, 70, or 50, because years ago that was not happening. And now they can have very successful careers, and they could head the family, in Blue Bloods. This is who he is, that family. And, I was just watching, I said it for my husband because he loves Blue Bloods, but the main two characters were on Wahlberg, he was on and Bridget, I think, and they were on the show they were ending the show now. But for them, it was like a whole family thing. And it's centered around their dinner table, and whatever happened at the end, it was discussed at the dinner table kind of. And, and I think people like that because it's not only somebody, murder, whatever. It's the family coming together. And he's so good at it, Tom Selleck. And the whole situation, that's why people love these things, and they're acting at ages where they never, I'm pretty sure most of them never.
In terms of ages, especially, because certainly in terms of ages, women, you know, always had much more trouble getting parts as they got older than men.
Yeah.
But, I mean, a good example of somebody who I was, like, totally blown away by because I hadn't seen her in, like, in a role as an older woman in all her career was Jodie Foster in True Detective. You know, the most recent season of True Detective.
Did you see it?
So you think of her playing, you know, Jodie Foster, the young Jodie Foster. And in this, she's like about a 60-year-old woman who's, you know, been beaten down as the police chief of this little town in Alaska. And it was really, really impressive. But,
I watched it. Did you
see
it?
Yeah, there was a lot
thing?
Of mixed feelings
it, you know.
On that show. But I actually was like,
Me too. I did too. And I did, you know, sometimes at the beginning I'm going like, do I really understand what's even going on there? And then I'm going like, oh, it's so dark. And every Sunday I'd be watching it and I'm thinking, God, I don't think I could live there. It's like black.
It was Alaska, the dark something. It was the dark gets dark for 24 hours a day in Alaska.
I mean, honestly, it was so dark. I mean, but she was great.
Yeah.
And I love her. You know, she's a great actress, you know.
Yeah.
And wait, she probably didn't think she'd be acting now either. And she did that.
It's fun to see somebody in a role like that, you know, when they're, she goes all the way back to being like a young girl, a Taxi Driver, and then you saw her in Sacrifice of the Lambs.
Right.
But, I mean, I haven't really seen her, you know, in a long time. But, I mean, going back to the character thing, because I was, we were talking about things. I mean, again, the idea of loving a character, when you were talking about the Tom Selleck and Blue Blood, I mean, just think about something like The Sopranos. Why in the world would anybody like Tony Soprano? I mean, he's a horrible person.
Exactly.
He kills people. He's dishonest. He cheats on his wife.
I know.
Everything about him. And yet we like him because that character is just
because
like,
he's in his
oh my
pool.
God, we love
you know
Tony
why?
Soprano.
He's in his pool playing with the ducks, okay? He's in that pool.
Whatever, they have those moments. Yeah. And of course, the brilliant conceit of this, that you have the mob boss going to see the female psychiatrist, you know.
But she was great.
But all these characters, it's like that. It's like when a character hits, you know, it's just gold, and we will follow that. I mean, the other thing, and I mentioned Columbo, you know, I always think about this. It's like, think about what that show was. There's no mystery involved. There's no supporting actors.
No. It's one because it happens right at the beginning. Yeah, right. I know.
And I've always thought, like, as a mystery writer, if you tried to go sell that story to an, you know, and you said, well, I got this idea for a show, and it'll be like 90 minutes long, and in the first three minutes, you'll know who killed the person. It'll all be, all the answers will come out in the first 3 minutes. For the next hour and a half, this kind of bumbling detective will try to figure out the answer until he does the end. Well, you know, that's the stupidest idea I've ever heard, you know. And yet, it's brilliant, and it's all because of that
character,
because we love the character. But I think those two, Columbo and
Tony Soprano. Well, look at Claire, and now you've got Nikki, okay, and, you know, and you're a man writing a woman really well because you know how they dress, and you know how they talk, and you know how they feel, and age is not a good thing for a lot of women, so you did that with Claire, you know. And, I mean, not everybody can do what you're doing here, because these are characters that are so well developed, and that's not an easy
and I don't know, people always say to me, like, why do you write so many? So I've written, I don't know, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but I would say, you know, like, probably out of the 24 books I've had published, probably like at least 17 or 18 are female characters, but I did do a male series before Claire, and I've done like a standalone with a male character, but virtually I always write women. And, And I don't know why that is. People have always said to me, I started out, the very first novel I wrote had a woman reporter. And I think it's just that as a writer, you know, I'm there are more challenge and stuff, certainly as, you know, in the media. Yeah. When I was starting out writing, you know, I mean, now women have it a lot better in the media and have it a lot better in a lot of ways. But the idea that, you know, a woman has to kind of like, you know, go up against other challenges than a man. I don't know. Yeah. It just has always been more fun. And the other thing is, I've spent, you know, years in newsrooms, and I work with some incredible female reporters and journalists. And I don't know, they actually just inspired me and my characters more than writing a male character. So, you know, again, it's not a well-thought-out plan.
Well,
it's
obvious
like,
that
like,
you had good relationships with some of the people you work with. So that's probably another thing.
Well, hopefully
I would
most
assume,
Well, because I would assume
knowing who you are and talking to you all these years, that I would assume that a lot of the women there would be so interested to talk to you. You're an interesting guy, and you like women. So, and you don't put them down. So I think that is an important thing, especially in a newsroom in those days. You know, because like when I started writing, I wrote under a man's name, Max Irving. And being an agent, I knew one thing, you cannot sign a contract under Max Irving. So I had, you know, an offer, and then I had to come clean, you know, and say that I was me, you know, and which is fine. Well, they didn't care. You know, but I did write under a man's name in those years because it's not today.
Right.
It's like
well, there
20
were
years ago.
There were a couple things going on back then. And again, we're talking a long time ago, like maybe 40 years ago.
Yeah.
But so I started in journalism at the New York Post in the 1970s, and you know, back in the 60s and even into the 70s, in a newsroom, it wasn't like, you know, where there'd be a TV newsroom or a newspaper.
Yeah.
It wasn't like it was now where, you know, women journalists were everywhere. The women journalists, most of them in most places, and because I knew some like who had gone to college with some stuff, and they were getting job offers to like, you know, work in the cooking section or features or do, you know, soft stuff, but not do like real hard news or crime. That was when I worked at the New York Post in the 70s, and this was even before it was owned by Rupert Murdoch. It was owned by Dolly Schiff in the 70s. It was different. I mean, we had some really great reporters who did like breaking court stories and police and all that. And I think that played a role in my head of watching these women kind of fight, you know, like a system that really wasn't welcoming them, but they had, you know, had beaten it and had done really well. And then, you know, as you probably know, I mean, and I've talked to some women authors about this, the same thing with writing mystery fiction. I mean, until really the 1980s, there weren't that many female writers of mystery fiction, and there weren't that many female protagonists. I mean, you know, everybody was, male detective or whatever.
You couldn't sell it. You couldn't, like, if you're going to make a series or something, you couldn't sell a woman. You could sell a man,
right,
but not a woman.
Well, you know, Sarah Paretsky, who was one of the
yes,
people
I know
who
that
changed
is.
All
she's
that.
From
she fought very
she's
hard.
From Chicago, right.
She started Sisters in Crime and stuff. And I remember interviewing her about this, and she said, you know, and she had a quote, which is much better than I can remember how it exactly went. But it was, in those days, there were two kind of women in mystery novels. You were either a vixen or a victim, you know, but you weren't the person who got the job done. And so she created V.I. Warshawski, tough woman. Now, at the same time, here comes Sue Grafton with Kinsey Malone. And the two of them together, you know, really changed a lot of things for women, just women writers in mystery, but also getting women characters. And then after that, you got Janet Ivanovich and Stephanie Plump. And so, like, when you look out, you know, now at the mystery scene, and you say, oh, there's all these, you know, female characters and authors. But again, that certainly wasn't the case. And I think that's why I kind of gravitated to writing a woman, because, like I say, it just made it a little bit more interesting, I thought, than writing another guy. You know, I mean, I'm never going to write, Philip Marlowe better than Raymond Chandler, or Parker better than Spencer or something. So I kind of gravitated to doing a woman. And my very first novel, this years and years ago when I first sat down to write a novel. I wrote it with a male character because that just seemed like the thing to do. I had a male reporter solving something, and I'd never written anything, and I showed it to some woman who I was friends with in publishing, and I said, "What do you think?" And she said, "Well, you know, it's okay, you know, but wouldn't it be interesting? What if you made the reporter a woman? Wouldn't that be like a switch?" And I did, and the story sort of just came alive, and I wound up selling that as my first novel. So that's kind of how I wound up writing so many women characters.
Well, I started writing male characters, and I do write a lot of male characters. Until I started doing all these podcasts and talking a lot, I didn't realize some of the things, you know, when you talk about it a lot, you realize, oh, I could do that. I didn't realize that when I realized it, I do write a lot of male characters. And because some of them were taken from screenplays, but I also wrote, like in some of my romance, you know, rom-coms, the shorter ones, they're a man and a woman, because years ago when you were sending scripts out, you had to have equal time. So the male had to have the same amount of time on the screen as the female. So you write both, because they were always having to have dialogue, because you couldn't, and that's why they stopped doing a lot of romantic comedy, too much money, because each star wanted so much money to do the movies. So now they fixed it all. They put it on Netflix, and there's a lot of people, there are a lot of good shows, and they're not well-known stars. And they're still good.
But writing, whether it's a man writing a woman like I do, or a woman writing a man, which, you know, has been done in some books, and you pointed out you did it, it's probably not as common. The
one thing in there you have to be careful of, that I know and I'm very aware of, is there's certain things as a man that I might get wrong, and there's certain things as a woman you might so the thing there, I mean, I have, so in my case, I have a woman who's my agent, and all my editors have been women, you know, so that's my failsafe, my backstop. Now, normally, it's not like they're like, oh, that doesn't sound like a woman would talk. Normally, they're like, no, you got it, you nailed it, and everything. But every once in a while, you know, they will say something, and they'll say something like, and this isn't like what she wears or anything, because, you know, that I get some advice from a woman on, because what I'm just saying, I've had a few cases where one or both, my female editor or female agent, has said, I'm not sure a woman would react like that. And whenever they do that, I listen. I take their advice. You know, I never say, no, I know better. I really try and listen to that. So I think, because I just think that's important, because you don't.
Editor is a man, and my editor for all my books is a man. Yeah. So that's true. I agree with you 100%, because we wrote a horror story together, a script. And so we used to sit in my office, and we used to discuss this. And then he would say, well, I'm going to do this. I go, no, a woman, this is not happening. You're right. That's very true, because there are certain characteristics that can't be, you know, you have to be that sex to know, or ask someone, is this right?
Yeah.
You know, or
you have to be careful. And like
in one of my Claire books, and not the last, this was, I think, a year or two ago, I wrote one called Beyond the Headlines, one of my Claire Carlson books. And it came out, I wrote it during the time of all the, you know, when Me Too was at its height. And so I decided to have the Me Too idea, the concept, become a big part of the book. And it's basically somebody who claims they've been attacked and raped and had to kill somebody in self-defense. And Claire, my character, you know, basically is trying to prove that the woman is innocent and that she, you know, she's telling the truth. And then at some point she begins to question whether the woman is telling the truth. And so you get into the whole question, Me Too, is, you know, do you believe everything, or can, you know, is somebody lying? It's a tricky area to do for a man, and so that was something that I was about.
It is, right.
But I did it, and I wrote it, and then, you know, when I showed it to the women in my life, you know, my agent, my editor, and stuff, their response all was, no, that's fine, you sort of did it, you know, like basically, you know, it was right. But so there are areas like this that you have to, but – there's always tricky areas in books that you write where if, you know, and the other, I don't, this is a little different topic, but the thought crossed my mind when we were talking about getting it right. It's like with a locale or setting. If you're writing a book about Chicago, you, because you're from Chicago, you're probably going to get everything
and
right.
And you wrote Ohio. You wrote Ohio. Aren't you from
Ohio?
Well,
I'm from Ohio, you see. So I'm
right,
from
yes,
Cleveland,
I'm saying
Ohio.
You wrote, that's why I have a list here of the stuff that I, because I noticed that you said Ohio. So, and that's why you always say that. It's easier
well,
for
but
you
more
to write
than,
like that.
More than just Ohio, because I'm from Cleveland, Ohio, but my character, Nikki Cassidy, is basically solving a series of murders in her hometown, which is a small town in southeastern Ohio.
Right.
Now, I went to college at Ohio University, which is in a small town in southeastern Ohio. So the town that she's in is very much inspired by the small town that I spent 4 years of my life in. So, you know, that's the kind of thing it's, to me,
what
it's
town,
real
what town was
important.
That? What town was that?
Athens, Ohio. It's
like
Athens,
I,
Ohio.
My father's whole family was from Middletown, so I get it. Middletown was very tiny. So, and there are a lot of little towns in Ohio.
Oh, yeah. But I just, you know, so most of my books are set in New York. I wrote a series of Nikki Cassidy books that were set on Martha's Vineyard, but that's only because I've gone to Martha's Vineyard year after year, so I know that, you know. But I couldn't write a book about, I don't think, I wouldn't want to write a book about set in Chicago. I've only been there like once in my life. Like when I started the Nikki Cassidy series, I mean, she's an FBI agent, which means she because of the backstory, she sort of needed to be based in Washington. But I didn't write a book about her being in Washington because I've only been in Washington a couple of times in my life. So that's why I moved
out
in action to this small town. But I think that's really important because it's like if you make one mistake, if your character makes one mistake in terms of you lose the reader. And you know, I've talked to people about this.
Do.
I mean, probably we've all done it.
Right.
You know, you're reading a book and you see something and you're saying, and they're writing about something you know, and you're like, wait a minute, that's not right. You know, and you just lose the thread of the book.
I think you're right about that. You know, and especially that isn't. I don't write historical fiction, but if you make a mistake in historical fiction, this is a horrible thing because it has to be exactly, they're so picky, not picky, but it has to be fact, very factual in historical fiction. And a lot of
I can't even imagine doing that.
I couldn't do it.
Cause
I know people
that have done that. Even like writing books set in the 60s or 70s, you know, I don't, because you have to make, because there is so many little things that you could get wrong to me. I mean, the research you'd have to do. I mean, like, you could have a character. I mean, like, you know, there's no cell phones in 1968, you know. But,
and that's the whole difference.
But if you're
it's
writing a
different.
Book then, like, say you had a character walk into a CVS. Well, but there is no CVS. It didn't start until
I don't know.
Or a McDonald's.
Well,
when
right,
McDonald's
and I think you're
there,
right,
you know?
About that. These are the things I go through too, because I think of all those things. And you know, because if I and my screenplay that I wrote, they didn't even have at that time. There weren't really cell phones as much, so I'm going to have to change everything. But I know what my editor Jeff had said to me years ago. He goes, just if you want to just keep your scripts the way they are, because they'll fix it if they want the scripts. And he's right. I haven't been sending them out, and it's true. A good story is a good story. So they do change it then. But you're right, it matters, because how could you years ago to solve a crime, it takes a long time. Okay, like Columbo, everything was, it took time. But now you just put something in a computer and it comes out and you figure it out.
So
it's a big difference. But you do see a lot of that now, older stuff. Don't you see that a lot?
I sort of missed the like with the reporter, I missed the idea that my reporter would run to a payphone to call in the story. I mean, now I have to work in all this stuff about
the
live streaming the event as it happens, you know.
I know.
That's why, you know, I thought, so Sue Grafton was really brilliant about this. So she set all her Kinsey Malone stories in the 80s. And basically kept Kinsey the same age in her early 30s. Like a lot of people, you know, will advance the age and change, you know. And so Kinsey had no internet. She had no, you know, news channels to watch or anything.
Right.
She was like what we had in the '80s. I mean, you know, she used the payphone and wrote stuff out on her notebook and things like that. So, that's another tricky thing in books. And like I say, by writing a book in present day, and I've pretty much only written present day books, but the danger there is everything today is changing so fast. Like, so my characters in a newspaper or TV station. So you have them, I don't know, they're using live stream or Twitter or TikTok or whatever, you know, to put stuff out there. But you've got to be careful because you're writing the book and these things change so fast. Book comes out maybe a year and a half after you've done it. And, you know, it could be like obsolete or outdated or
I know.
Or seem
this
ridiculous.
Is the whole thing.
So,
I know. But then again,
so
I think people maybe adjust now. Maybe they do adjust more because there is a lot of Netflix. There's a lot of Hulu. There's a lot of there's a lot of movies on Peacock. And there's a lot of people now who never watched old. I had a show a few weeks ago about, you know, older Hollywood movies. And there are a lot of people, so there are more, maybe 10 years ago they wouldn't have thought that way, but now they're really getting used to some of these older series. And so it's not so difficult, but some people don't know what a phone was like. You know, some of the kids, you know, the little kids don't know. They don't even know what a phone is or a phone booth, you know. So
well, it worked well. You know, as a writer, I've had, you know, I basically try and keep everything I've ever written somewhere. And so sometimes when I'm running something, I'll go back and find something I wrote years earlier and try and put it into the book I'm doing. And, you know, many of them will have that. Yeah, my person is, you know, they have to go to a phone booth or they don't know who called.
Right.
I mean, you know, all this stuff today, like somebody calls you
and
you know who's calling you before you look at the phone, you know. And this wasn't the case. I mean, you know, there was a day where we didn't even have answering machines. I mean, you know, you called somebody and if you got a busy signal, you didn't get them, you know. Or if the phone rang, it just rang and rang and rang.
But I did
find
it interesting, though, that – you know, younger kids are, a lot of younger ones are watching old things, so they're figuring it out. So in the writing, like I was going to ask you a question about this one thing. You know, the way life is now, it's very intense, you know, and writers would always go like, could this happen? You know, especially when you're writing mystery, murder, sex, anything. You know, this is the most fast-paced I've ever seen this war. I mean, it's just things happen and things that you go like, oh, my God, whoever thought this would happen. But now when a writer is writing, they have a lot of leeway because it could happen. You know, years ago they would go like, oh, no, this could never happen or that could never happen. But now a lot of things do happen.
Yeah. But also I wouldn't, you know, this idea that it has to be believable. I'm one of those people that if you write stuff too believable, it's going to be boring. You know, like the whole point of fiction is this. It's like suspend belief. Like my character, Nikki Cassidy, I mean, in these three books, she's going back to this little hometown, and there's like all sorts of girls being kidnapped and murdered and disappearing and serial killers running. And is that realistic? Of course not. But, you know, you go back to, you know, like, Murder, She Wrote, Jessica Fletcher, is the classic. I mean, she's in Cabot Cove. There's 2,000 people in the town. Like 500 of them have died in murders. You know, it's what it is. And, you know, I always talk about my Claire Carlson series. So Claire Carlson is a TV journalist. I've been in journalism all my life. In all the years I was in journalism, I have never once known or even heard of a reporter who solved the murder on their own, you know, without the cops, just on their own solved the murder. One case where that happened. In my book, happens every book. Clara solves the murder. That's what fiction is about. If you try and make it too, well, we want to make this what would really happen. I mean, that can be boring.
You're a realistic person, but you're realistic in your writing. You're not going to go off the end. You know what I mean? But I'm talking about for others. There are a lot of writers that, like, if you're writing, like in my case, when I was writing the Warrington series, you can't swear because it's a sweet romance. So that's why I stopped writing at the beginning of my career because I couldn't get into the stereotype of this is how it should be or whatever. But in that kind of a book, I know that my male characters, I know the father was so aggravated he wouldn't have just not sworn. He would have probably sworn, but he doesn't hear.
Yeah,
although then
yeah.
again, in my house, my father didn't swear. He didn't. I don't know. We just didn't. But I swear, you know, myself now. You know,
yeah.
He's gone,
well,
but I do swear. But not doing those things makes it, it is a little difficult because you have to make them real, but then people don't like it, though.
Well, the swearing thing is tricky.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's tricky. I try and sort of walk the middle on that. Like, I have my character, you know, say sort of like not terribly offensive. Because, I mean, see, in a newsroom, so my character is in a newsroom, so it gets a little tricky. So, you know, like, it was,
yeah.
you know, like, so somebody's, you know, a grizzled newsroom veteran is not going to say, oh, fudge, instead of another F
yeah,
word, you know,
right,
kind of thing.
Right, exactly. Right, exactly.
But I
right.
try not to use, like, words like that too much. I do have my people, you know, my characters will say, oh, Jesus Christ, or God damn it, or whatever like that. But
yeah.
even that will offend some people. I've known authors who refuse to put any kind of swear curse words in their books. And I've known others who it drives me crazy because they just, you know, they pepper it with, you know, like words
know.
That, you know, that I find I don't like. I think I try and moderate it to a degree. But again, if you're going to try and talk the way somebody talks, I mean, people do use curse
do talk
words
like
in their everyday conversation.
I know they do.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how I learned how to write them. That's how I learned how to write them, because that's why I went under a man's name, because in my head I could write, I could swear. As a female, it wasn't as easy for me. And when I did my Virginia Templeton, some of the words I'm not comfortable with still, that I, and so if I write her again ever, I will not use some of them because it's I don't need it, you know. And I think it was a bigger craze 5 years ago. You know,
yeah,
you put on
yeah.
the words,
again, I
you
think
know.
The worst thing I find is when, like, I'll read some book and every other word is the F word, you know, like over and over and over again.
Right.
I'm like, I don't need that.
Although
the
some people talk like that. Some people do talk
I guess,
like
but
that.
I don't like talking to those people.
Right.
But the other thing that falls into that category, too, I find is, and again, I'm very moderate on this, is graphic sex or violence, but graphic sex.
Yeah.
You know, and I try and I just don't.
Yeah.
You know, my sex scenes basically are somebody going to bed and then they wake up in the morning talking about what a lovely, you know, whatever. I don't play those things out in graphic detail. And I don't play I don't play murders out in graphic detail either. I mean, I basically have somebody find the body or something, you know.
Right.
Because those are things that I just, when I'm reading a book, I don't really feel comfortable reading graphic accounts of either violence or sex. I kind of page through and like, okay, I don't really need to know the every chapter and verse of what happened in bed between these people, you know.
Well, because some of the things now are very graphic, and even on TV, you just want to go like, what is that there for? I mean, you know, it doesn't.
Yeah.
I don't think it helps push the story, but that's the world we live in now. People like that. Yeah, I was watching Basic Instinct recently, and I really, I do like that movie. Yes, I love it. And I like Michael Douglas. I just was watching. What were you going to say?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I'll tell you, the backstory in that is, so that movie was written by one of my longtime friends and college, best friend
Esther,
in college, Joe Esterhaus. So we went to school together, and I'm still in touch with him. And he became one of the biggest names in Hollywood for writing
that movie.
And I'll just tell you a funny writing thing about that. I asked him one day, how long did it take you to write it? He said 13 days. And I said, you wrote that whole thing in 13 days, the whole script? He said, yep. And then he said, but I was thinking about it for 2 years beforehand, you know, kind of thing. And it's kind of like how his mind
I do like
worked.
That movie. It's a really good old-time.
It's a great
it's
thriller.
An old-time
it's a
good
thriller.
Graphic
yeah.
type of movie. A really, if you want to learn how to write
and
like a
Sharon
good thriller
Stone
like that,
is the.
I love her.
She is like the perfect, you know, like ice cold blonde, you know, killer,
perfect.
You know,
the roles are perfect. They were, it was cast great. It was perfect.
And it combined sex
and
violence. So.
Oh God.
Yeah.
But it was great though.
So,
and they had a big to do when that movie opened. And the thing about it was, is that they had some scenes in there people didn't like, but people still saw it. And you know, I think it's on, you know, it's on, well, now naturally it's on like Netflix or something. And I think people, you know, watching that or Cutting it, the Cutting It, no, it's The Edge. I can't think. with, I can't even think of it, but there's a few older movies. Jagged Edge, right, okay. And those are movies.
Well, you know who wrote that? You know who wrote that movie? Joe Esterhaus again.
Who was it? Oh, he did? Okay,
Jagged
so those are two of my.
Yeah,
no,
that was Glenn Close, wasn't it?
Glenn Close. And right. And some of those older movies were really, really good, just to watch how they did stuff. And it wasn't about, you know, it was just finding out, you know, you figure things out, but it was also sexy, but not like as insane as people are now. So, but Sharon Stone, yeah, she's perfect. Glenn Close was good. You know, and those actresses were very good in a lot of those movies. So
yeah,
I think
but now that you have the trade-off, you have the trade-off in like a lot of really good movies. There's a lot of really good things on TV now.
There are. I watch a lot.
But all, between Apple and this, you know, normally we would have a whole show talking about all the things we watch on TV, because I continue to, you know, like you do, I'm sure, watch things. And a lot of this stuff on Apple and Paramount and Amazon Prime and stuff, it's really good. It's as good as all the stuff you would have seen in movies.
But
and,
when you write,
I'm
but
watching,
when you're writing, but when you're writing, now this is people will know because they know Claire, you know, you write characters that people remember. That's what this is. My show was memorable because they will,
right.
And Nikki will be the same. And it's not, like you said, it is the story, but it's not. It's who these characters are. People will not maybe know the name of the title, but if you say, you know, Claire Carlson, they've read all the books, you know, so they know her.
Right.
So
well, let me just make one more push to explain everybody and say, so the character is called, the books are by Dana Perry, who is me, and the books are featuring a character called Nikki Cassidy, and the first one is called The Nowhere Girls, and if you got that, you could find, and they're all pretty much, they're not really books that you're going to find out in bookstores. They're very much online and Audible. That's the way this publisher puts stuff out, which is the way a lot of people read.
I love Audible.
And,
you know I do.
And they're pretty reasonable in terms of price. I mean, they vary, but you know, the price of the online books are, you know, $3.99 or $2.99 or something like that. Because that's the way this publisher works. They try and put out a lot of books online and in Audible, as opposed to, you know, the old fashioned
print
way. I
love Audible, and I don't know why more people don't listen. I mean, I think, and I'm just saying this. If you are looking to write a good story, listen to an Audible, and your characters, they're very good on Audible because it's a lot of dialogue and it's really good. You know,
well, it's funny
as
an author to listen too, you know, like it's kind of like, I guess, the equivalent of like if somebody put your book on the TV screen or movies, you know, because you'll hear the woman narrator is reading the lines that I wrote, except it's in her voice and I'm listening and it's really, as an author, it's a kind of a cool experience.
Isn't it weird, though? It's kind of like I feel like when I listen to mine, because I have in my Warrington series, he's a male. Well, you know, he loves the books. He writes, he does Westerns and everything, but he seemed to like to want to do this, you know, and he loves them. So, but when I listen to it, it's like sometimes I don't even know. I feel like, who wrote this? Who is this?
I know.
It's a weird experience.
I've had that in a number of occasions, and it's funny because I don't know, I'll just throw that I was in a Netflix series. I was a narrator about Son of Sam a few years ago, and I was watching again recently. And and you know, sometimes I'm on the screen talking, and sometimes it's a voiceover, you know, like over, you know, scenes of, you know, crime or something happening in New York. And I was watching it, and there were actually a couple of occasions, and I heard somebody talking about New York City was a cesspool of crime, whatever. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, that's kind of interesting. I wonder who said that. And then I look, and it's me. It's got my name actually, you know. And you're like, oh my God, I said that.
Oh,
I'm
what
is my
guy?
That, you know.
See,
but it's kind of funny.
It's always shocking.
When you see this.
So I have on the web, on our page here, I have your website here where everything is on there. And, you know, I think that this is going to do great, this series, and, you know, and especially because it's on Audible. This is where most people do. They listen to the Kindle. They're on their Kindle, so they either do Audible. So I think that's a smart way to do it, and I like it when they do
Well,
Audible.
I think that's unfortunately, not unfortunately, but, you know, I think that's the way most people,
that's
including
it.
Myself
that's how
or
it
you.
Goes. Yeah, but
go
there are a lot
out.
Of people picking up books, though. I've heard that too, though. People are now buying.
Well, bookstores,
because,
yeah,
you know,
no, there's still bookstores,
yeah,
doing
they're
well.
They're coming
and,
back,
and
I think. We're getting some
good,
more.
But,
they're opening Barnes
and
Noble
my,
again.
Yeah, no, I know it's in my neighborhood, but and the website, just to be clear, is www.rgbelsky. There's no Dana Perry.
Yes, I haven't
anything
read
about
on
Dana
there,
Perry
yes,
would be on there. Yeah, yeah. So you got to. I can't confuse things any more than I already have with the different names.
Well, I think they'll figure it out. You know, I mean, because you know, it's out there. You know, I mean, and it's on your page also on Amazon. You know. So,
yeah, yeah. Well,
it
would really be disturbing, though, if somebody liked one and not the other. Like, yeah, Dana Perry character is really, author is really great, but I can't stand R.G. Belsky. That hasn't happened yet, so hopefully.
No, because
you know,
I think they're not, that's not, I don't think that's going to happen at all. They're just different names, but
well,
no, I don't think so.
It's
you writing them.
It's only,
either way. I don't know. I think it'll be fun. But anyway. this show will be, I'm going to send you the link to the Spotify and Apple, because now we're on Spotify, so that's a good thing. And so I'll send you that link. And so thank you so much for being on. And I know that you and Vince will be on it. Vincent Zandri
yeah,
will come back for another fun show in June. And then, as we know, we never know what we're going to talk about. We don't have this. There's no idea what we're ever talking about.
Oh, with
about.
Vincent. No, but, Vincent, no, you never know. And we've still never talked about all our favorite TV shows, which could be a whole other show.
I know.
So
we'll do
anyway,
that.
But,
right, we'll do that. He doesn't
all
watch
right.
as much TV as you and I do. Okay. Take
no,
care.
He
all
does,
right. Thank you
no,
all for
he
listening.
Doesn't. I don't know.
I
don't think he even has a TV.
No, he
but
doesn't.
I watch
he
it
watches
constantly.
On the computer. I think he watches on the computer. He doesn't have a TV.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you and I do, though, so we have plenty to say.
Yes, we do.
All right, Marcia.
Yes, we do.
Thank
all right.
You.
Take care. Then we'll
bye-bye.
Do our own show on the TV shows. Bye-bye. Thank you.
There
bye-bye.
You go. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.